Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy, and Brett Beer is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy on call. Brett Beer does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I don't know why the Ken Flo commentary gets me so fired up. It's not because he's my friend. Every time I hear the Ken Flo commentary, gets me fired up. Good way to start the show. It's Monday, February 22nd, 2021. Didn't screw up the date this week, folks. It's episode 289 of the Anik and Florian podcast. And I want to hear from the audio folks this week because we have new microphones. If you're watching on the video side, you know that by now. Mine's attached to a big black arm. Makes me feel like I'm in a radio studio. But if you're somebody who exclusively ingests this podcast in audio form, Ken Flo, I want to hear from those people because if this audio isn't good, I'm going to have a panic attack, I think, because we've tried to put ourselves in a position to succeed. How you doing, kid?
I'm doing well, man. Moving on up.
You sound great.
Yeah, these new mics are killer, man. I'm excited. I've been really bringing the show down, to be honest. It's been my fault, guys. I need to just come out and say that the audio issues have been on my side. I've had some crappy audio, but not anymore.
That's right. Audio is good.
Yeah.
Working on everything. Try to bring you this fine podcast in the mixed martial arts space. And what a weekend it was. We're going to recap Blades Lewis. And of course, we will have predictions for you for UFC Fight Night, Rozenstruik versus Gon, which beckons Saturday night from the UFC Apex in Las Vegas. But let us get to the recap here in headlines. Oh, if you're betting big favorites in mixed martial arts, you are not doing all that well. Now, this happened to be the biggest upset in the UFC main event since UFC 199 when Michael Bisping upset Luke Rockhold in 2016, that courtesy of ESPN stats and information. But Derek Lewis, a plus 350 underdog, north of plus 400 to win by knockout would have been the way to bet the fight probably if you were on the Lewis side. But how about the Black Beast, Ken Flo, over Curtis Blaydes, round two, KO. The uppercut was a no doubter. A couple follow-up shots for good measure. Your thoughts on the heavyweight main event over the weekend, my man?
You know, the latter part of that first round was not going well for Derek Lewis. Yeah, I kind of was very concerned. I said, he's just not looking right. It seems like Curtis Blaydes is really putting it on him with the striking. Curtis was doing a good job of backing up in the beginning, and he was kind of making sure that he was close to the fence. I think because if he did get taken down, it would be a little bit easier for him to scramble and not have Blaydes on his back. A lot of fighters like to do that. But, you know, I think the patience ended up paying off in that second round. And this is a guy, man, it doesn't matter what he hits you with. It doesn't matter when he hits you. And it doesn't matter really where he hits you. He's going to hurt you. And I mean, is there a guy who's more prolific as a knockout artist than Derek Lewis? Dude. He hit him with that uppercut and froze him right on the button. Like, it was, you rarely see that. Usually you see, you know, the scrambling of the brain, the guy drops and, you know, he's kind of out of it. Or you see a guy drop, then he goes out. It took one shot. He landed it and it just put his lights out, immediately froze him. Unbelievable.
He didn't even catch him clean. And if right. you listen to what Derek Lewis had to say, he said, I didn't feel good in the back. I didn't feel good in the inspection zone. I didn't feel good in round one. Mm. And our good buddy Bruce Marshall listens to the Anakin Florian podcast. He tweeted at me, thank God he was flat last night. Could have killed someone otherwise. Love that dude. Consistently getting better, more committed to his craft. Lot of good things in that tweet right there. But I'm telling you, thank God he was a little bit flat or we might be talking about a fatality. You know,
seriously,
this dude and the power. So no man in UFC history has more knockouts. He's tied with Vitor Belfort now with 12. And in terms of the commitment to the craft, Ken Flo, he was in the best shape of his life. I mean, did you see this man on the scale? I mean, the body fat percentage has gone down. And I think having back-to-back training camps for this type of specialist, and I shouldn't call Curtis Blaydes a specialist, I guess, but to have back-to-back training camps for Blaydes and to be in this type of physical condition was, I think, what it was going to take to spring this type of upset. So all hail the Black Beast, my man.
Look what Blaydes has done to guys like Volkov and Junior Dos Santos and a lot of guys. You know, his ability to take you down and beat you up and control you and, you know, outstrike you on the feet. I mean, it's amazing what he's done. And Derek Lewis just went out there and took away all of that momentum from him. And it's an extremely impressive win for Derek Lewis. But yeah, I agree with you. He looked like he was in tremendous shape. Derek is a guy who's been dealing with back injuries. And as a guy who's dealt with back injuries over the course of my career and still do, it's awful. You're not able to train like you used to. You can't put in, you know, the two or three sessions. Maybe you get, you know, four or five sessions a week, you know, and when you're able to double that up or triple that up or whatever that may be, you know, it's going to pay off. You're going to be better. You're going to be more skillful. You're going to look like you're in better shape. And Derek Lewis certainly looked like he was. And I hope it's because physically he's healthier.
So that Daniel Cormier win over Derek Lewis continues to age well. And when we talk about Curtis Blaydes and the historic takedowns, most decorated takedown artist in UFC heavyweight history, still hasn't been able to fight for the title because these guys with real power just seem to find that button against him, whether it's Francis Ngannou times two or Derek Lewis over the weekend. So on the Curtis Blaydes side, this is a massive disappointment in terms of the championship trajectory. Cody Donovan and the whole team, I know, is heartbroken. But what are your thoughts on Curtis Blaydes and sort of where he goes from here?
It's tough. You know, what he has going for him in some ways is that, you know, the heavyweight division isn't as deep as it used to be. And he definitely has that potential and he has some great wins over some good guys. So I don't think it's going to take you know, a whole lot of wins for him to get right back in there. However, he does need to make the proper adjustments and he needs to learn from this as far as not putting him, not putting himself in danger when he shoots in like that. You know, GSP was extremely successful with his takedowns because he always put his head on the outside of the knee. So instead of going for your traditional double leg takedown, which is more straight on, he had his head off the center line. You know, so he'd hit more of a high crotch style takedown with his head on the outside of his opponent's hip.
Right.
And that puts him off the center line from things like knees and uppercuts and, you know, hooks. And I think that's something that perhaps Curtis Blaydes should look into, you know, considering he's a big time takedown guy. So, but, you know, this was a devastating one. And more importantly, he's got to take some time off. This was a devastating knockout, man. And when you're seeing guys get put out like that, and of course, this is the heavyweight division we're talking about, but we're also talking about Derek Lewis and his power. So he's got to take some time off. You know, don't do any sparring for a little while. Get his head right, get his body right, and then come back and work on his skills. But he's still a good fighter. He just, you know, he made a mistake and he got caught by a very dangerous man.
In terms of the two, not three, follow-up shots landed by Derek Lewis, right? You know what my thesis statement is on this, and I know people aren't going to like it, but my thesis statement is super necessary in a lot of respects because I have seen too many instances in which a referee either jolts in, phantom trying to stop the fight, maybe a referee like Dan Mergliotta, I believe, when Chet Congo fought Pat Barry, actually makes contact with the athlete, and then the fight continues. I would like to see athletes show some restraint when clearly their opponent is removed from consciousness, as was the case here. But Ken Flo, You got to go until the referee pulls you off. Is that not the way you guys are instructed in the back?
That's the thing. Now, I want to ask your opinion on this, John, because, again, I didn't hear any of the interviews or if there was a press conference where he was asked about this. But after the fight, Derek Lewis said, that's Herb Dean's fault. That's Herb Dean's fault. Now, is he saying that because Herb Dean didn't stop it in time, or is he saying it because of some other reason? Because I agree with you. As a fighter, our job is to fight. Our job isn't to determine if the fighter is out or not. So we got to keep going until the fighter says stop. I've learned that from jiu-jitsu tournaments or from fights where you stop too early and the guy goes, I didn't tap. What are you talking about? I didn't tap, you know, or I'm still fighting. So you have to go until the referee goes. So what was that in reference to? Did he address that or?
Yeah. So,
okay.
And it's interesting because Marina Rodriguez almost had a knockout taken away against Amanda Ribas all that long ago. You got to close the fucking show.
Yeah.
And if I'm a fighter, I can assure you that I probably would have gotten myself in trouble going overboard because you have to literally get pulled off by the referee to make sure you win the fight. So there were a couple instances early on in this fight where Herb Dean rather sternly warned Derek Lewis and Curtis Blaydes, but for extended fingers, right?
Okay, right.
So maybe there was an axe to grind there, but no, I think Derek Lewis's point is that Herb Dean, in his mind, needs to close the distance faster, especially in the 25-foot octagon, maybe be closer to prevent those follow-up shots. But I think Herb Dean stylistically likes to give you every benefit of every doubt. He is a fighter that leans towards a later stoppage as opposed to a premature one. So I don't know. It's disappointing that Curtis Blaydes had to take the extra shot. We all know historically those are the ones that can often be the most damaging. But I have absolutely no ill will for Derek Lewis. And I even take it a step further. Got to make sure as the athlete that you close the show and deal with the consequences thereafter. I hate to say it.
Well, that's the thing. Here's the deal. If you don't, and you don't make sure that your opponent is out after landing that shot, and they come back to consciousness, and they come back to hurt you or knock you out or beat you, that would be devastating, right? So again, you have to make sure the job is done. And as a fighter, you fight. It's the referee's job to stop the fight. And, you know, yes, you don't like to see those kind of shots, but honestly, I don't think this was Herb Dean's best night.
Right.
And, you know, Herb Dean has done a great job over the years, but he has made some mistakes. And when you're making mistakes as a referee, unfortunately, it's at the cost of the fighters and the fighter's safety. And I don't think he did a great job with the Olenek fight. I don't think he did a great job here.
Right.
I'm not saying it's an easy job. I definitely am not volunteering my ass to do that.
Right.
But it wasn't a great night for him.
So Derek Lewis, Francis Ngannou, Anthony Rumble Johnson, a lot of other names I'm sure you could inject into the mix. When you talk about the biggest power strikers or power punchers, I guess, we're talking about hands in a lot of respects here in UFC history. What do you think would happen if Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou fought again? If you didn't see the first fight, you didn't miss a whole lot. It still holds up as this great outlier where there was inaction and hesitancy on both sides. What do you think would happen again? I think it would be a one-round fight. Somebody's twitching on the canvas.
I remember watching that fight live and just scratching my head going, what is this? I think I had tweeted right before the fight, like, get ready for fireworks. There's no way this one goes the distance. You know, of course, it was one of the worst heavyweight fights of all time. But I don't think that happens this time around. I really don't. And I think, listen, both of those guys are capable of ending the fight in an instant with any part of their body. And I would love to see it. I think it's a fight that we will see. Hopefully. I think also for both those guys, they want to erase that. You know, I think they had so much respect for each other's power both weren't really willing to get in there. But I think things would change if they did it a second time.
I'd love to hear the conversation if Dana White calls Derek Lewis and is like, all right, man, I'm going to put you guys together again. This time going to be for the belt potentially. What's going to happen? Get some sort of guarantee from those guys that they're going to get after it. But I bring it up in the context of the UFC's heavyweight division. Belt will be on the line March 27th. Stipe in defense against the number one contender, the aforementioned Francis Ngannou. Curtis Blaydes 2, Jarzinho Rosenstrike 3, and Derek Lewis 4. So Derek Lewis is going to move into that number two slot in all likelihood. We have a main event this weekend between third-ranked Rosenstrike and seventh-ranked Ciryl Gane. So for the Black Beast, it's right there. And obviously the circumstances surrounding his first championship opportunity against Daniel Cormier were less than ideal. So no overstating this win in terms of what it means. Derek Lewis's next fight could very well be for the UFC heavyweight title.
It's wild. It's great to see because, you know, we saw him when he had his first fight in the UFC to see how far he's come and how he looks now. It's great to see a guy like Derek Lewis get close to that opportunity. And yeah, his next fight might just be for the belt, and it might be against Ngannou. So I love it. The guy really has positioned himself extremely well.
So I remember when he made his UFC debut against Jack May in 2014 on Fox. And then I believe you and I called his second UFC fight against Guto and Ascench.
Right.
And I remember saying something like this throwback, break your face open type of power. I mean, it's scary stuff when Derek Lewis is in there. It really is, to Bruce Marshall's point earlier. So yeah. We'll see where Curtis Blaydes goes from here. But a huge weekend for Derek Lewis. Nice to see him get the bonus and his record-tying 12th UFC knockout. All right, a lot to unpack in the co-main event, Yana Kunitskaya and Ketlin Vieta. Unanimous decision for Yana Kunitskaya. There were a lot of people who thought Ketlin Vieta won this fight. God, did I love those elbows late from Yana Kunitskaya. I love her maximization of the final 25 or so seconds of this contest. And in a close fight that was 1-1 going into the third, for me, that type of damage was enough to give Kunitskaya the round and thereby the fight. I know that's a dissenting opinion, but overall, your thoughts on the co-main event and a big win for the Russian Yana Kunitskaya?
I certainly wasn't watching to score, but I will say this. It was close, and I think that what a lot of people are looking for, judges, of course, especially, is a certain attitude from the fighter, right? If I'm going out there to score points, and my opponent is out there to kind of kill me, and every time they have an opportunity to do so, that's going to look way better than the guy who's out there trying to outpoint the other one. And I think for Ketlin Vieira, she was trying more to kind of score points and kind of get certain position and do things here. But Kunitskaya,
nailed it.
Yana was really trying to hurt her opponent, and you saw it in the form of cuts and blood and, you know, bruising, and she was going for it, and I think that looked more impressive to the judges, and especially if you kind of have that attitude throughout the fight, like fighting to the last dang second of that round, of every round, that counts for something, and I think that's why she got the decision.
A lot of weird circumstances surrounding this event overall. You had Dracar Close and Luis Pena unable to fight because of one of Close's cornermen testing positive for COVID-19 just a few hours before the event. You had Chaz Skelly in the octagon ready to go. Jamal Emmers unable to make the walk because of back spasms. You had four athletes missing weight. Ketlin Vieta missed weight. Rafael Alves missed weight for lightweight and was competing at featherweight, Kenny. It was the worst weight miss in UFC history. And you know who I'm thinking about when this is happening. I'm thinking about Ken Flo weighing in against Diego Nunes at 46 and Ken Flo actually making 45 for Jose Aldo without holding onto a towel or nothing. I mean, this dude missed lightweight competing at 145 pounds.
That's what I'm saying. Like, did he not get the memo? Did he think he was competing in a different weight class? That's just like, you didn't try, right? Like, come on, bro. You didn't try. Like, what's going on?
That's just a terrible look. And if I was sitting octagon side and Chaz Skelly was there, I don't know what I would have done, man. You got to feel awful for that guy. Hopefully he got his win bonus. I almost would have offered to go in there and fight the guy. He can just submit me in 10 seconds.
Seriously. You know? Well, there's nothing worse, man. I mean, you're out there. You're literally out there ready to fight. Your mind has been made up. You know, you see the announcer in there, the referee's in there. Everything's ready to go. And you're waiting around going, wait, I'm not fighting? Are you kidding me right now? That's awful. But I will say this, as a guy, again, who has a bad back, it's unlike anything else. You know, if you have a sore ankle, if you have a bad knee, if even your neck or your shoulder or something's messed up, you can kind of get, you know, you can get through it. But when your back goes out, it feels like someone stuck a kitchen knife in your back, and there's just no getting up off the floor. And I think that's what happened. So I think if he was physically able to move and walk himself to the octagon, I would assume he probably would have done it. But when you have a back injury like that and it's spasming up, there's nothing you could do, man.
It's completely debilitating.
Yeah.
Oh, but man, for Chaz Skelly. And then he grabs a microphone at the post-fight press conference and was singing, I think, Tenacious D or something. Not the most appropriate song per se, but he's a really good dude. He came to my charity event a couple of years ago. And Ken Flo, you were in a swing bout back in the day, correct?
Yes.
Can you explain that to our listeners a little bit?
Right. So I was it was when Anderson Silva fought Nathan Marquardt, I believe. So I think, you know, the UFC had five fights for the main card. And because of how the pay-per-views were organized back then, you only had a certain amount of time, you know, to fight. There was a certain amount of time. And then once that time went off, the pay-per-view was shut down. Like, there was no more television after that.
Right.
So I was what was called a swing bout. And it means that I would go anywhere from I would be either the second fight of the night, the third fight of the night, the fourth fight of the night, or the sixth fight of the night. But what had to happen was the championship fight had to happen. And, you know, if it was, you know, if you were short on time or close on time, you had to make sure that you were able to get those five rounds in. So
right.
Anderson Silva, of course, being the champion, needed to have that amount of time to make sure that he'd be able to fight and everyone be able to see it. So they had me ready to go for the second fight. I go, Kenny, you're on deck. Get ready to go. All right, now we're going to move to the third fight. So I'm like, okay. So then I kind of wait around a little bit. You're going to the fourth fight. Okay. You're going after the main event. So I had literally been warming up, you know, probably an hour before I was supposed to go on for the second fight. So man, I was warming up for like 3 hours anyways, and went on after Anderson Silva had knocked out Nathan Marquardt. No, they literally had me strip off my I had like a Bruce Lee warm-up suit on that I was ready to debut for the pay-per-view. I had to take that off. There was no music. You know, me and Alvin Robinson had to sprint out to the octagon, and we were announced and we fought.
So at least you got to fight, and you knew no matter what, even if nobody could see it back home, that you were actually going to get the chance to compete. And that was a W finish, if I'm not mistaken, over Alvin Robinson. So all's well that ends well, but hopefully they can turn Chaz Skelly around quickly. It's sort of a tough climate, though, to do that. It sounds like, oh, we'll just find Skelly somebody. But, you know, these fight cards, we got 15 fights on these cards, right? Everybody needs a slot. You know, I know Miranda Maverick would have loved to have gotten in there quickly after Jillian Robertson was unable to make the walk on fight day for her a couple of weeks ago, but easier said than done. So Yana Kunitskaya, obviously a big, big win over Ketlin Vieta. Derek Minner on the main card. These Daukaus boys can fight. Did you see Chris Daukaus against Alexei Olenek? You must have if you didn't love the way Herb Dean handled the end of it. What'd you make of Chris Daukaus there moving to 3-0 against the ageless Alexei Olenek?
I told people to watch out for Daukaus, man. First of all, he looked like he, you know, has lost weight. So he looked way better. And he's sneaky fast, man. He put together some serious combinations. And again, you know, for Olenek, he's a tremendous grappler. He's very dangerous. But, you know, on the feet is when where he's most vulnerable, right? And Daukaus just took full advantage of that. And, you know, that flurry at the end was – it was a lot of unanswered punches, man. And I thought I thought Herb Dean should have stopped it a little earlier. And he wasn't defending himself. And even after the fight was stopped, you could see Olenek, you know, he was stepping in potholes after that fight. You know, he couldn't get his balance. He almost fell down. It was hard to watch. The guy's, he's an older guy, man. He's been fighting forever. Don't let him take that kind of the punch.
I agree. Couldn't agree with you more. And it seemed like some fans were suggesting that Olenek was sort of trying to give Herb a signal like, bro, can you come in here
and save my ass? Yeah.
All right, plenty more on UFC Fight Night with Ray Longo in about 60 seconds. But fellas, we know 2020 was not ideal in a lot of respects, but it's a new year and time to get your stuff together, especially when it comes to your package. Our sponsor, Manscaped, can help you with that. See, Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming and has been for some time now. They offer precision-engineered tools for your family jewels and have now helped 2 million men all over the world get rid of unwanted hair. So maybe if hygienically you let yourself go a little bit while in quarantine, Manscaped is here for you so you can kind of reboot and stay clean and shaved in 2021. So last year, as many of you know, I was introduced to the Lawnmower 3.0. My grooming life has never been the same. The skin-safe trimmer with a ceramic blade is truly a game changer, and I guarantee you this thing will reduce nicks and cuts to your two best friends. Third generation now, the Lawnmower also has a light on it as well. That's more useful than you think. And Manscaped has a lot of other products to offer as well, including the Crop Reviver Ball Toner Spray. It's all part of the perfect package from Manscaped to give you all the right tools for the job and a fresh start in 2021. So here's the deal. You get 20% off and free shipping by going to manscaped.com/AF. That's 20% off with free shipping by going to manscaped.com/AF. 20% off and free shipping. Not now, but right now at manscaped.com/AF. All right, let us get to the star of the show. It's Ray Longo.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Well, last week, Ray said that we made his Monday and we lifted up his spirits. And hopefully we can do that again this week, Ray, because as some of our listeners and viewers know by now, the Longo Weidman MMA family lost an absolute giant over the last few days. Ray, our deepest condolences on the loss of your friend, Vinny, Vincent J. Pecora Jr., father-in-law to former UFC middleweight champion and close friend of the show, Chris Weidman, and for his wife, Marie V, losing her father tragically like this. I met this man back in the day, and our apologies, Ray, man. This is a huge loss for Chris and you and the entire Law MMA family. So our heart has been with you over the last 48 hours or so, my man.
Yeah, really appreciate it, man. Vinny was just a stand-up guy. That's the way you think of Vinny, a stand-up guy. Like, again, he shot from the hip. I think he probably rubbed a couple of people wrong, but to me, it was a breath of fresh air. You know, no backstabbing. You knew where you stood with the guy. I'm going to say, besides my mother, probably my biggest fan. I mean, I will really miss this guy. I mean, I always loved seeing him at the gym breaking balls. We had a lot of laughs. You know, he was a throwback. He probably was about 70 years old, maybe, I'm going to say. And ex-Vietnam vet, did a bunch of tours. I think one of the stories is, like, he did his brother got drafted and he went in for his brother and did another tour. Wow. So, I mean, that's the type of guy he was. He, you know, I think Chris put in his post, he was either talking wrestling, MMA, or Vietnam. That's what he talked about, man. And he supported everybody in the gym. I mean, I'm going to say the first day he saw Marab's work ethic, he was like, this guy is something special. Like, he's just that guy. He was, everybody loved him. Again, like, I don't think there was a bigger fan. And his, you know, one of his pleasures, you know, as you get older, you know, just to have passion about anything is great. But one of his pleasures was coming to that gym and interacting. You know, he was a legit tough guy, man. He really was. And
yeah,
man, I'm going to miss him. I mean, you know, he's got a colorful past, man. You could write a book on this guy. This guy crammed a lot into those 70 years. Trust me. So he's going to be missed. He really is. And, you know, just tragic the way it happened, because to me, I go over it in my head, just didn't have to happen, you know, and it was a complete accident.
Right.
And really, to make it worse, he was hit by another guy from the gym.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, listen, and we tried. I mean, this guy is devastated, but everybody knows it's an accident. We really want this guy to heal as quick as possible, because I don't know if that's possible, but... You know, so think of that whole situation at the gym. When it went down, it was mind boggling. But listen, man, you know, life is crazy. It's all a part of life. And, you know, I'm not really like a religious guy, but this is really when religion helps you. You know what I mean? They have a great way of looking at, you know, death. And Weidman's fantastic with that crap. He really is. He's a great guy to talk to, because it's soothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, leaning into the faith at times like this, I know, helps a lot of people through. The Vincent J. Pecora Jr. Memorial Wrestling Scholarship has been set up. It's a GoFundMe. You can find the link on Chris Weidman's Instagram page. They've raised about $20,000 of their $50,000 goal. But she writes, I believe it was Marivi who wrote, "My dad's two biggest loves in life were family and wrestling." So, and again, this guy's unmistakable, man. As soon as I saw his face, there was familiarity there. And I understand there's a picture of me and him circulating, and I hope I can get my hands on that. But this hit us all like a ton of bricks yesterday, Ray. And we were certainly thinking about you. I do have some brighter topics if you would like to.
Let's go, man.
All right.
And he would want us to. I know the guy. Right.
Well, if he is your biggest fan, I mean, I thought other than your mom that Kenny and I were kind of your biggest fans. Gave you a goddamn your own fucking segment on our podcast.
This guy was above and beyond that. Trust me. He was a great guy.
So if he's that big a fan of yours, Vinny had to listen to the podcast then. No,
I mean, I think he listened to anything
that
gym did.
anything that was Ray Longo content. Well, no place has provided you Ray Longo content over the last 6 years, quite like the Anakin Florian podcast. So we'll start with your hair, then we'll get to Derek Lewis. We got some Aljo stuff as well before we get on out of here. So Matt Serra texted me about your hair.
He's just a rotten cocksucker. I don't even have to hear what it is. I don't even have to hear what it is. But well, you know, cocksucker comes to my brain. So go ahead. What was it?
In well, like, no, I think we both
what it was.
I think we are both aligned in thinking that you should wash it.
The next time you see me, I'll be a completely different person. How's that?
All right.
I'm so psyched up for this title fight. I might shave my head.
So are you going to Vegas?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
When are you leaving?
Friday.
Oh, wow. So you're okay. That's right. You said it'd be 10 days out. So I can't wait to give you a big COVID hug in a few days, my man.
No, we can't. I can't get COVID. I'm immune to the COVID now.
That's right. You're good to go. You're good to go.
Yeah, no, I would have went out early. I got there's so much stuff going on, and we have it kind of worked out because we have the the wake for Vinny Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is the burial. So whatever. So it all works. I'm not going back negative. I'm telling you, he definitely wouldn't want that at all. He would want this thing to go on. There's absolutely no question in my mind. He's like, again, stand up guy. He is that don't waste no time. Let's just move on. So, but yeah. So what was the, that was it. He just wanted me to wash my hair.
Yeah. I mean, I think we were just both acknowledging that you can almost see the lack of Perk Plus on the Anakin Florian podcast. You know, but that's neither here nor there. I guess we'll talk about the Black Beast, Derek Lewis. He has a haircut right up my alley, right? Shaving that head. And how about Derek Lewis, most prolific knockout artist in UFC history?
I got to tell you, man, I thought Blades, I thought it was going to be a ground and pound. You know, he was going to take him down. I'm blown away. Like, he's got one shot at getting you. Like, I mean, if I was, you know, like, you know, Kenny, back in the day when the wrestlers were coming on strong and you always had that one guy, just hit him with an uppercut.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. Never worked.
I'll hit him with the dim mock. you had to sit there and go, oh my God, these guys are lost. This motherfucker hits this guy with an uppercut from, and he said that's all he was waiting for. He was willing to even lose the stand up to keep his hands in position to land that uppercut when the guy came in. And Blades was doing great standing up, which is crazy. You know, it's like
Ray, I think it was half uppercut, half dim mock, because he put him to sleep as soon as he touched him. It didn't even look like he hit him that hard. Yeah. It just shut him down immediately. Yeah. It was crazy.
Can we slow that down? This wasn't a fix, was it? I mean, this guy, how the hell did he do that? I mean, that guy, he stiffened that guy up.
It's his chi. Derek Lewis has impressive cheek.
I mean, I'll just name him. I'll kick him in the balls when he comes.
Well, it makes me think as a non-fighter, granted, about the two times that I was separated from consciousness and concussed in my life. Because, well, no, but I'm curious with this type of shot, right? Under the chin, like what part of his brain is hit it? You know what I mean? Like, how did this shut the lights out?
Yeah, I don't think he hit him in the head. I think it was the fear of seeing the uppercut coming. The guy just shut down. I don't even know. Did that hit him in the head? It might have hit him in the chest.
It didn't even look like he hit him clean. He didn't hit him clean. I mean,
No, I'm thinking he stopped his heart for a split
second. Unbelievable.
No, crazy.
Yeah.
So this would be on my wish list. I think the UFC should do. He has a rematch with Ngannou.
Right.
They cut the octagon in half and they make the over under 30 seconds. I want you to ask Yanni what he thinks of that. Cut the octagon in half, against Ngannou,
over under
30 seconds. Yeah. Maybe even cut it in quarters. Don't let them move. They just got to go in there, you know. Unbelievable. I mean,
we actually discussed that earlier in the podcast. I believe if those two got the chance to fight again, that it's a one round fight and one of those guys will knock out.
I mean, at this point, it's whoever hits the other guy first is, you know, I have that saying, firstest with the mostest is the bestest. That's that fight. Whoever gets there first is going to be a winner. And I think that's why it was so tentative the last time. I think they both know it, you know, and it's crazy. It's like, you know, Derek Lewis, you could see his power, you know, like it's not, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but Ngannou, his stuff comes like with speed. Like it's like he's generating I believe, even more force, which is scary.
Because
Eric Lewis is just bombing people to sleep. It's like again, that shot, I think it was the, I know he definitely got hit. I'm joking with this, but it's almost like it was the anticipation. Like I put my head down, I see this guy load up his uppercut, Penny, and I just go, I'm out. They just put me to sleep, you know, because it didn't look that good. And I'm like, wow, I was standing there going, this guy's got some power. And there's a guy that looks like he's having a ball in there too, which is really good, you know.
Kenny and I called a lot of his early fights in the UFC. And I'm so glad that Kenny sort of brought up his back injury. You know, this is a guy who, if memory serves, had a fight with Fabricio Verdum go away on fight day, Kenny, because of a back issue. And I do think that I was sort of talking about his strength and conditioning and physically how good he looked, Ray, but Kenny was sort of alluding to the fact that if his back is right and he's sustaining training camps and putting 8 and 10 weeks together, two camps essentially for Curtis Blaydes, you know, you can't help but be in really good shape. And he certainly looked it.
Oh, 100%. Let me tell you something. First off, we have this discussion all the time. The back injury, when it's like a nerve thing, lower back, is the worst injury I think you could have. It just shuts you down. You can't move. So, man, it's a good observation. You get your back straight. First off, you'll feel mentally better. You get an increase in cardio just by the stress of feeling great. If you're able to work out, what an added benefit, man. Because when I'm sure he's walked around in so much pain on a lot of times that when you feel that you could do things and you don't have that pain, it's a home run. It's a new lease on life. And that could very well be it because, you know, that the back, it just, man, it just locks you up, man. It's horrible.
So in terms of Stipe and Francis Ngannou, I know you're backing your guy Stipe to win that 100%. Fight. Is that correct? Yeah. I mean, can you imagine if Stipe defends against Ngannou and potentially Derek Lewis right now and just rides off into the sunset? Unbelievable.
Man. Yeah, Stipe, come on, man. How could you not acknowledge the body of work this guy has? He looked great in his last fight. I think he knows what to do to win, and it's not going to be easy because I think the other guy probably fixed those kinks in his game. But, man, that's going to be exciting.
It's going to be interesting to see where Curtis Blaydes goes from here. You know, he never fought Stipe. I don't know if he's going to get that opportunity. Likely would have to string together a couple more wins at this point in time, but it's going to be a tough one for him to swallow. Anything else jump off the card over the weekend before we spin this thing forward, Ray? Any other performances that you wanted to highlight?
I thought the girl fight.
Don't call it a girl fight. I mean, you got two daughters, man. People hate when we call it a girl fight.
No, yeah.
The women? You're talking about the women in the co-main event, right? Oh, okay. The
beautiful women.
Yana Kunitskaya and Ketlin Vieta.
Yeah, I thought the scoring was interesting in that fight. I think it was maybe a step in the right direction, right? Because they definitely scored it on damage for sure.
Right.
But if you really – I'm saying 8 years ago, the old scoring, whenever the hell they changed it, the other girl probably just wins that fight for the wrong reason. So I thought, I didn't know which way it was going, but when I heard the scores, I go, all right, I get that.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
She definitely put an exclamation point on it. The damage was definitely clearly lopsided. The control was, you know, going the other way, but I like the way they scored that.
And last thing on this card, and Ken Flo, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Tom Aspinall as well by submission over Andre Arlovsky. And I think a lot of people are thinking that maybe England's got a heavyweight that really can break through and be a significant problem. Kenny, we'll start with you. What'd you think about Tom Aspinall disposing of the future Hall of Famer Andre Arlovsky?
You know, he's big, he's athletic, he's fast, and he did what a lot of other heavyweights could not do to Arlovsky right now. You know, Arlovsky, yes, he's been around a long time, but this guy has shown that he still loves the game and has continued to improve and adapt during the fight. But Aspinall was just way too much. He was moving better than Arlovsky. He was landing shots, and he's got the killer instinct, man. As soon as he had him down, he went around right to the back, didn't waste any time, took him out with the rear naked choke, and that was it. And Arlovsky almost, like, as he got up, he's like, I don't even know what happened out there. Like, it seemed like he was just overwhelmed, and it was a great performance by the British heavyweight.
Yeah, definitely. He definitely overwhelmed him against the cage that time. And, you know, great fight IQ, man. He got hit a couple of times. He said he felt the pow. He went to something else that nobody expected, I think, which is always beautiful. And he latched onto that choke, which is crazy. And John, you alluded to something. Arlovsky is a mystery to me because he still looks like he wants to be in there. Obviously, this guy said it himself. Aspinall said he felt the power and he changed gears, you know. So, man, I tell you that I thought this guy was done 5 or 6 years ago. So the fact that he's still in there and he's competitive, it's something different with him. I don't know what it is because, you know, I'm always on the side. I don't like seeing the older
right.
guy
right.
take a beating. He seems to deal with it better. I don't know why, but.
Yeah, but there were people that buried him in 2011. It's fucking 10 years later. So, but you're right. Yeah. He does seem to be aging gracefully and he still is able to train 3 times a day and super hard. So I guess you didn't like seeing Alexei Oleinik take that type of beating from Chris Daukaus, huh?
I think I called that with to somebody else because Daukaus is tough, man.
Yeah.
Those guys are really tough. But you know, Linux got one way of beating you. How old is
1976 for Alexei Oleinik. So coming up on 45.
My age.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Ken Fletcher said 36.
A guy that if he grabs, you know, what's the choke he does, Kenny? I mean,
Ezekiel.
Ezekiel choke.
You're going to sleep, you know? Yeah. I mean, so, yeah.
I'd rather do a lot of fraternity hazing again than get put in Oleinik's Ezekiel choke. That does not look pleasant at all. Eamon, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead, Ray.
No, go ahead. Go.
I was going to say Eamon Zahabi was the only bonus winner we did not discuss. Got to feel good for Eamon Zahabi after the long layoff, right? Huge knockout and the accompanying 50K. Ken Flo, you got to feel good for your guy Ross and Eamon. Did you ever train with Eamon?
I trained a lot with Eamon, actually. I brought him out to Boston to help me train.
That's right.
He's a guy that has helped me a lot. Great kid. It was great to see him when he got into the UFC for the first time. Has had his ups and downs, but to see him get a win and to do it impressively was great to see. Just one of the nicest dudes in the sport, for sure. So real happy for Eamon and for Frost.
I did owe that, you know, I mean, he, you know, the times I've met him, he's just a sweet kid. You know, Faraz is a cool dude. There's a lot of guys in my gym that like him. I was in the locker room, I think in Connecticut, but you know, I was with a guy that was a big fan of his. Me and Faraz just busted the guy's balls. You know, it's fun, but that kid's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
He is.
He's
really happy for him. The other thing that jumps off my head now that I'm thinking about, what about the guy that missed weight by 11 pounds? What is
missed
that?
Missed it by that much.
I love it, Ken. You know, Kenny, it was so bizarre. He had to come up with, it was the salmon. I mean, think about it. It was so nutty that's the only thing you could say. My shoes were too tight. How could I be late?
Yeah.
My sneakers hurt my feet.
What's the excuse? 11 and a half pounds. What are you doing? Wrong weight class.
And you know where that guy is now, Kenny? He's swimming upstream.
Yeah.
I don't think it was
God.
Guys, I mean,
what is wrong?
Well, I don't even need to read what happened. Again, because a lot of things happen to Ken Flo and Paul Felder when they're trying to make that number, you know, and they make it. So not a good look for Rafael Alves, I don't know how to pronounce his name right now. I did not call the card. Go ahead, Ken.
Ray, I was going to ask you, when do you take off for Vegas and who's going to be in the corner with you on fight night for Aljo? You
know, I'm taking off Friday. I'm still not sure who's in the corner, believe it or not. So I think because of the COVID, you know, restrictions, he's – you know, it's not like the old days where you could have guys around. You have to have guys that you train with because that's who you're going to warm up with in the back. So I'm not really sure. He flip-flopped a couple of times. So I'll let you know next time I talk to you for sure.
You get the extra body, obviously, because it's a title fight.
Yes.
Last thing before we let you go. How about our guy Bilal Muhammad stepping in to the main event against Leon Edwards on March 13th? We have Bilal on this show last week, Ray. You probably didn't see it, but we sort of started talking about him fighting Li Jingliang. And then I got thinking aloud that, you know what? Leon's going to need a ranked opponent, and there aren't that many guys out there. And now Bilal's getting his first UFC main event.
Holy crow, Joe Silva, great job.
Well, no, forget about my part in all of it. No, but this is what careers are made of, right? I mean, this exactly. is.
He's stepping up. He's doing the right thing. And look, the guy's got confidence. He's a grinder. He's always in your face. I don't think that guy's an easy fight for anybody. So hats off to him, man. I think, who knows? You know, I think it's a great opportunity. And, you know, cream always rises to the top. You know, you can't stop it no matter what. So we'll see what happens. But if he's going to be there, he's going to be there. And this will be a great fight to prove it.
Kenny, real quick, 4 straight wins for Bilal, 8 of 9. And if you look at the top 5, you can argue matchup wise, this might be a better stylistic draw for him than some other guys in that top 5. Mm-hmm. I did watch a little Leon Edwards film after the fight was announced. I see a speed discrepancy. You know, I think he's going to have to figure out a way to deal with Leon's speed. But I think a winnable fight nonetheless. You know, Bilal's plus 200. It's not like he's plus 600. I mean, Vegas certainly giving him a shot.
Absolutely. And listen, you know, the kind of pressure that Bilal puts on his opponents and his ability to mix things up. He's not a one-dimensional fighter. He can do a lot of different things. He knows how to adapt, has a lot of experience, has a lot of momentum now. I think he could pose a lot of problems. You know, no one likes high-pressure fights like that, no matter how good you are. Right, you want to have some space. You want to have, you know, ability to breathe and think and plan. And Bilal just stays right in your face and makes it a nasty, horrible fight. And I think that's kind of what you got to do against a very technical fighter like Leon Edwards.
Yeah, no question about it. He has a smothering style, and he seems like he's a student of the game, so he understands it. And he's got the chops to back it up, man. You saw him, you know, suck up those leg kicks, those calf kicks.
Yeah,
he's not tough. Exactly, yeah. He's tough. I mean, there's no question that the guy's tough. Technically, obviously, I think Edwards has the advantage, but like Kenny says, when you're getting smothered, that. You know, that advantage could go disappear very quickly.
Especially in 25 minutes to do it, you know, right?
Yeah, 25 minutes to do it. And the guy hasn't been active.
Right.
One guy's been active. One guy hasn't, you know. So, you know, if I'm Bilal, I mean, I would try to drag that fight into the fourth or fifth round and see what, you know, you never know what happens. But he could smother the guy.
All right. So next Monday is March 1st. First day of Women's History Month, my calendar tells me. So you're going to be in Las Vegas next week, Monday for the show. So that would seem to be an 8 a.m. call time next Monday for the Anik Florian podcast.
What was it? What?
He's busy that day. He's busy.
All right. Well,
no, seriously. Well,
maybe we'll.
Oh, my God.
Well, hey, I'm going to be out there doing the live event, Rosenstreich and Ciryl Gane this weekend. So,
you're going to be out there?
Yeah.
Oh, so we're doing it together.
Yeah, we're going to hang out.
Right,
we'll hang out.
Like a pajama party.
We'll do whatever you want to do. You get a haircut and wash your scalp, and I'll see you in a few days. All right?
I'm going for the pert right now.
There you go. All right,
guys.
Get on out of here. Hey, best to the family and the whole Weidman clan, of course.
Well, I'll tell them. But again, big fan of everybody. I'm going to be missed. And thank you very much, guys. Really appreciate that.
All right.
Take it easy, guys.
Take care, Ray.
Every week here on the Anik and Florian podcast. And we dedicate today's episode to the late, great Vincent J. Pecora Jr. All right, so heavyweight division had a big weekend, of course, and the hits keep on coming this weekend live on ESPN+. It'll be Jairzinho Rozenstruik and Ciryl Gane in the main event. To that end, let's get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian. The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Main event challenge today is brought to you by Oddshark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks with expert in-depth analysis for each game. Their free statistics, numbers, and trends will help you make the sharp picks on game day. Head over to Oddshark and start playing like a shark today. That is oddshark.com. Don't forget the second S. And Ian Parker with a cough now joins us live. Team Florian wins the week 5-4. Overall lead is 18-16 per our intern, Casey Williams, whom I trust now to a great extent. He's absolutely killing it. Ian Parker, it's good to see you, my man. We're going to begin our picks here with a prelim in the lightweight division. Alexander Hernandez, minus 190. Thiago Moises, plus 165. Who do you like?
Interesting matchup here. Thiago Moises coming off a nice win over Bobby Green, which I know Kenny and I both didn't really expect. I still like Alex Hernandez here. I still think he's got a lot to offer overall at the game. I'm thinking his wrestling background will help him keep the fight on the feet. You know, he has shown sometimes when he gets a little too aggressive that backfires. I think he's kind of coming into his own. I think he's more focused now. And if he keeps the fight on the feet, the fight should be his. So I'm going to go with Alex Hernandez.
Alexander Hernandez, minus 190, training at elevation. Now Ken Flo, he's won 2 of 3, bonused his last time out. And as Ian mentioned, last win for Thiago Moises on Halloween against Bobby Green. Your thoughts on this one at 155 pounds?
You know, Moises has improved as a striker. I think I was impressed by the improvements he made in his last fight. I do think he can be a submission threat. And Alexander Hernandez, you know, is kind of an inconsistent fighter at times. I feel like, you know, sometimes he doesn't take the smartest of approaches. But while I do see some value for Moises, I do think that Hernandez should get the nod here.
I agree with that. I see value in that plus 165 number. But again, we're talking about hamsters' lives. We're trying to pick winners right here. All right, a fight just added to the main card on Saturday. So this is very interesting. Angela Hill, minus 300. Ashley Yoder, plus 240. So Hill has been looking for a fight, Ian, as you well know. She hasn't fought since last September. She got COVID-19 prior to the scheduled Tisha Torres fight in December. Here she draws Ashley Yoder, coming off a big win in November. What do you think about Ashley Yoder in this spot? Any value at plus 240 for you, Ian? I know I'm just kind of breaking that betting line for you now. What do you think?
I think there's a tremendous amount of value in Ashley Yoder simply because of how she's able to use push kick. Yeah, I know, Kenny. I know. Listen, at this point, you got to understand you and I share a lot of the same sentiments.
I know. That's the problem.
Yeah, you can't help but love me at this point, and I love you too. The deal with Ashley Yoder, she's very smart with her striking. She knows how to keep the distance. She is, I think, high level like you, where she doesn't get into brawls. And she knows where she's great at, and that's in jiu-jitsu. And this is where the biggest difference between the two is going to be. I think she can get on Angela Hill's back. I think she can get the fight to the floor. She fights with urgency off her back. She does not sit there. She's not content. Angela Hill's gotten better overall, but this is not someone that she's going to be able to take down and sit on top and outpower them. You know, I just don't see that happening. And in the striking area, I think Yoder has improved tremendously. I think Angela Hill fights a lot, but she does not beat the top level competition. And I just think that styles make fights. And in this situation, you have striker versus not maybe as good a striker, but way better on the ground. So I'm going to roll the dice with Ashley Yoder. I do love the value in that plus 200 number.
Kenny, I agree with a lot of that. I thought Angela Hill would be minus 180 or so. I just checked it before the show. She's a 3-1 favorite. Your thoughts on this one at 115 pounds?
Yeah, you know, again, just based on the odds, I think Ian is accurate here. I think that there's a lot of value with Ashley Yoder, and I will pick her. I think that, you know, she's deceptively tough. You look at her, she's this pretty girl, and, you know, you think that she's going to go out there and kind of pitter-patter. She's trying to hurt you. She's mean. Right, she wants to submit you. She has a good amount of experience. She has only gotten better. And while I do think, Angela can be difficult to deal with, she's very unorthodox on the feet, so getting a rhythm on her is probably going to take Ashley some time. And Ashley does get better as the fight goes on. So I like Ashley here as well. I think there's a lot of value here.
Breaking news. Ken Flo thinks Ashley Yoder's hot. All right, next up,
girl.
At featherweight, it'll be UFC appearance number 24. See, Kenny and I are old now, right? So we can say, she's a pretty girl. She's a pretty girl.
Right.
All right, exactly. Featherweight division.
You're just not breaking any news. It's kind of obvious.
Huh? Well, right. That's right. That's true. UFC appearance number 24 for Alex Caceres. He's the modest 235 favorite against Glory MMA and Fitness's Kevin Kroom, who is plus 195. All right. So Kroom debuted memorably. How about this horse shitty in Parker, right? September 12th last year, steps in on one day's notice, needs just 31 seconds to submit Roosevelt Roberts, gets a $50,000 performance of the night bonus, but a pre-fight drug screen identified the presence of marijuana. So Kroom subsequently agreed to a proposed adjudication agreement that includes a suspension, which expired January 26th, reduced fine, yada, yada, yada. But, dude, you take the fight on a day's notice and you get your win overturned and your bonus overturned for smoking weed on a day's notice? I mean, I know Ian Parker would have passed that test because he's the only Jew I know that doesn't smoke the devil's lettuce. But that is garbage, no? One day's notice?
Isn't it fucked up that I don't smoke and I still look like I do that.
You do.
Like, it's not fair. It's just not fair. If I do this, I look even crazier. Oh, my eye like this. So, I think he's lucky that's all he failed for on a day's notice. He could have been out the night before doing whatever he was doing. This to me is an interesting one also with a full camp, and he's like someone with a very similar style to the guy he just beat, Roosevelt Roberts, a tall, lanky guy who strikes in an unorthodox fashion with good jujitsu skills. I kind of want to take a shot at Kevin Kroom here again. I really do think that there is value. Kenny, I know. I'm sorry. I just think that Caceres, we've seen everything from him. I don't think there's anything that's going to be different. And with Kroom, I'm curious to see where he's at. I don't think Caceres should be that big of a favorite over anybody after with a certain level. And his win over Roosevelt Roberts was really impressive. And I kind of see the same thing happening here. So I'll take the underdog also here in Kroom.
Kempfo, what do you think? Caceres has won three in a row, showing a pretty good form of late.
I'll keep it short. Yeah, you know, listen, I do think Caceres, has shown improvement, but I don't think it's enough to say that, he deserves, this kind of line over Kroom. I think Kroom could definitely win this fight. I think he's going to be a problem for Caceres a little bit, and I'm going to go with Kroom as well.
All right, next up at Bantamweight, you guys made this pick a couple of weeks ago. Jimmy Rivera, -145, Pedro Munhoz, +125. There was a positive COVID-19 test on the Rivera side, so this one gets a few week delay. First meeting between these two, 2015, it was Jimmy Rivera by split decision. Ken Flo, we'll lead with you here. Rivera, Munhoz, which way are you going in the rematch?
I'm going to go with Rivera here. I think both these guys have the ability to knock the other out. I do think that Rivera hit a little bit harder. And I just haven't seen the adjustments for Munhoz. Munhoz puts himself in the line of fire way too much for my liking. It's brave. It's courageous. But I think against a guy like Munhoz, it could get himself hurt there. And he can knock out Rivera as well. But I like Rivera here.
Jimmy Rivera, the pick to click for Ken Flo. Ian, so I see you navigating a familial situation. What's going on? Are you talking to your dogs, your children, your wife? What are you you're double dipping right now? What's going on there at home in Parkland?
I thought we talked about not acknowledging when I'm trying to be on mute and try to be as incognito as possible. Yeah, the dog's a little on the senile side, and I think he slept like 3 days straight. Of course, he just wakes up and barks at the door. So I was trying to get him to
right.
Thanks for acknowledging that, though.
How many dogs do you have? Three. All right. Next week, or whenever you're back on the show, presumably next week, can we have Thanos on camera to show the world? How many pounds does Thanos weigh now?
He's 100 and between 115 and 120 on his hind legs. He's about 5'8".
Crazy.
And he's 9 months today. So, yeah, he's a big,
nine months old.
He's a big dude. He's a big dude.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right, Rivera Munhoz. You picked Jimmy Rivera a couple weeks ago. You like him again?
I do, and I'll keep it quick. I just think that his output and his volume is going to outweigh the counter-striking that Pedro does. He picks too much. I think that was also why he lost Frankie. And I just like what Jimmy did in his last fight. If he does what he did and uses the calf kick and he just comes forward, I think he'll have success and he'll get the win. I think Rivera is somebody who can bounce back from his losses besides that last win and really still get to the top. I really believe that.
I thought Jimmy Rivera looked great against Cody Stamann on Fight Island. And I do believe now he's sort of liberated by the lack of contention. Not that he's not in the mix, but I just think he's fighting looser and not worried about preserving a winning streak or being 18 or 19 and 1 or whatever he was for so long. So excited to see that fight. Co-main event. Ken Flo is going to lead the dance here. A lot of people are excited about this fight, and rightfully so. Two finishers, Magomed Ankalaev, -325, Nikita Krylov, +265. Kenny, we will take the round, the method of victory, all that noise. So this division is very interesting right now. You got the Dagestan-born Ankalaev. He's won five straight, bunch of bonuses already in his six UFC fights. He's 14-1 overall. And then Nikita Krylov, also 28 years old, 20 fights over 500 for his career, a bunch of finishes for him. What do you think about this one, Ken Flo? Krylov +265, Ankalaev -325. Who you got?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Krylov try to take this fight to the ground, but I don't think he's going to find much success there. I'm leaning the way of Ankalaev. I'm not sure if it's going to be a finish in the first round or second, but I think Ankalaev is something special. Let's go with the second round knockout.
Second round TKO from Magomed Ankalaev. My twin bro loves this guy too. Ian, what do you think about Ankalaev here against the seasoned Nikita Krylov?
Oh, I share the same sentiment as Kenny. I think Ankalaev is something special. I think we've only haven't even seen him come close to where his potential could be based on the trilogy or rematch with Krylov or whatever it was. I think Ankalaev gets it done. I'm going to say round one. I don't think Krylov is even going to come close to getting this fight to the ground. Ankalaev's takedown defense is good. His striking is good. He's aggressive. I'm going to go with him in round one.
I like the conviction. I don't know if you're going to back that up with some big noise at the window or maybe sprinkle Ankalaev in some parlays. Minus 325 is pretty juicy. All right, main event at heavyweight. IP, we'll have you lead us off here if you'd be so kind. Ciryl Gane, minus 270. Jarzinho Rozenstrike, plus 230. So last week, Ian, Derek Lewis really took advantage of the spotlight. It shines on these guys now on Saturday night. Gane a near 3-1 favorite here. Your thoughts on the price, the main event, and how it's going to transpire, my man?
Sorry,
whenever you're ready, Ian. That's okay.
If I sneezed the wrong way, John's gonna be like, "Hey, no, I sneezed it. Okay, he's supposed to." I clicked the mute button; it wasn't unclicking. I'm sorry. This dog is insane out here.
Hey, I just wanted to make sure that you knew it was your turn to make a selection. You know?
Yeah, no. I'm good. I was investing in Bitcoin real quick. My bad. Terrible joke. I'm sorry. I was trying to be funny. It wasn't funny. Although Kenny, I did do it. Thank you. It's good.
There you go.
Look, with Gane, he could strike. All right, we've seen that. Rozenstrike's the more dangerous striker, I think, but I hate this. I'm sorry. Can
you will be lucky if he edits this part out.
I probably just won't because selection. You said Bitcoin. Yeah. You said Bitcoin was a joke. There's nothing funny about investing in Bitcoin for your future.
No, not a
Bitcoin. That's not a joke.
Exactly.
No. So I can't edit that part out.
Not that was a joke. It was a joke. Oh, you know, all right. I like the favorite here. I do think that we've seen him use his ground game intelligently. And I think with this fight, that's exactly what he needs to do. I think Gane is going to win this fight second round submission.
So, all right, Ken Flo, Ciryl Gane. This is an outstanding striker, outstanding Thai boxer out of Paris, France, trains under Fernand Lopez and alongside Nasruddin Imavov, who we just saw compete last weekend against Phil Haas. 7-0. On the other side, Rozenstrike, one pro loss came to Francis Ngannou. So two high-level heavyweights here. Vegas thinks that one guy is much better than the other. What do you think?
Listen, I think Ciryl Gane is going to be able to keep the distance. That's Rozenstrike's best chance is to get on the inside, try to land one of those nasty hooks that he has, you know, beat him up with his legs from the outside, then get on the inside. I don't think he's going to be able to do that. I think Gane's going to be able to utilize those long-range weapons, keep him on the outside, can mix things up with his takedowns. I think Gane by, let's go, referee stoppage round three.
Ooh, a little referee stoppage from Ken Flo, round three for Ciryl Gane. All right, if you want more from Ian Parker, it's at Ian Parker MMA on social media. We'll let you get back to it, my brother. Appreciate the insight and your time as always.
Thanks, guys. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
It's truly amazing to me. This dog sleeps for like 23 hours out of a 24-hour day and only wakes up and I rest on the couch for a second or I come onto the show. There's nothing...
That's
I'm
okay.
Gonna have to give Benadryl. I'm thinking Benadryl for every show. That's what's gonna happen. So,
all right, my man. Appreciate you.
See you, dude.
Love you guys. You got it.
So, I was doing Misha Tate's radio show last weekend on Sirius XM, or last week. I go on with her after all of the pay-per-views, and we were both doing the show from our respective garages. So, Misha was in the garage because it's the only place to get peace and quiet. You know, she has two young kids, and I was sort of saying on the interview, like, it's nice to break away from the chaos and just do this 15-minute interview. They're like, how you doing? I'm like, I'm doing fucking great. I'm getting a 15-minute break from childcare to do your radio show. I'm doing great. Then I was like, yeah, I'm in my garage. And it is hard in Florida, in Nevada, in places where you don't have a basement. Like my kids are at school right now. I'm good. I don't have any dogs. But, you know, we need 20 minutes for me and Parker. And it's not that I'm shitting on the guy on the way out, but it's like total fucking chaos at his house every time we try to do the show, you know?
You're not wrong. You're not.
Ken Flo's got a young child, but somehow figures out a way to get a moment of solitude. All right, that is going to do it for us this week. If you want more of the show, AnnickFlorianPodcast.com. There's also a store there with a code to get 10% off your merchandise. Ken Flo also has an outstanding YouTube channel that is actually linked to this Anakin Florian podcast YouTube channel. A lot of tutorials, instructional videos. And, you know, generally speaking, more Ken Flo analytics in your life is probably a good thing when it comes to mixed martial arts. So we will talk to you next Monday. We will be back to recap Rozenstruik and Gone. And then, of course, look ahead to that massive championship triple header that is coming up quickly. February turns into March quickly, folks. Next week is a pay-per-view week, and there will be no fewer than three UFC championship belts on the line. Thanks to our executive producer, Cody Merrill. Thanks to Ray. Thanks to Ian. For Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. We appreciate every last one of you listening, subscribing, watching, truly. And if you have feedback on the show, fire it in at Anik Florian Pod. Your wish is our command. Until next week, don't text and drive. Try to wear a mask if you think it helps other people. Love you, Miletic. See you later.
'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
In Colorado, you can legally gamble in Blackhawk, Central City, Cripple Creek, and licensed online sports betting. Protect our communities. Learn more at PlayLegitCO.com. A message from the Colorado Division of Gaming. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-GAMBLER.